Malaysia's top police official asked for patience today, saying investigators are looking into every little thing in the investigation into the disappearance of Flight 370, including the people who prepared food for the flight, a comment which will probably only add to the conspiracy theories. Among them, the plane was captured by terrorists who are hiding it to use for attacks, the whole thing was a life insurance scam, or a new Bermuda Triangle, that the plane is in North Korea, that aliens are involved, that if it's never found, it means an entirely new and powerful force is at work on the planet. Admit it, did at least one of these occur to you? Why are people attracted to conspiracy theories? And what is the difference between a conspiracy theory and one that proves true? Couldn't terrorists have taken the plane? Harvard Law Professor Cass Sunstein addresses all of this in his new book, Conspiracy Theories and Other Dangerous Ideas. He also served in the Obama White House and joins us from the studios at Harvard University. Cass, welcome.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
And what are you thinking as you listen to these theories about the plane?
Well, the first thing is just sadness for the people who've been lost or who've lost loved ones. So it's a tragic event. The second is to just notice that conspiracy theories are often a reaction to a tragic event or a event that scares people. The human mind often gravitates to trying to figure out some kind of agent or force that's behind it all.
Yeah, it's a feeling of powerlessness. Because there's nothing we can do, so the ideas fill that vacuum. And they did in the past. You talk about Amelia Earhart, the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic, disappearing in 1937.
Yeah. So the conditions for conspiracy theorizing are, first, uncertainty, or at least arguable uncertainty, and second, an acute emotional state.
Yeah.
It can get worse if people feel powerless. So people who are drawn to conspiracy theories often feel particularly powerless.
Yeah. But as you point out, some conspiracy theories happened. Republican officials did bug the Democratic National Committee headquarters, leading to Watergate. The U.S. did not cause AIDS. That's another theory. But the government did give African-American syphilis in an experiment decades ago. The Gulf of Tonkin, which launched the Vietnam War in full, was a so-called false flag. You know, there is a thin line between a conspiracy theory and the truth sometimes.
Yes, I would use the word conspiracy theory, the term, just as a description and not build into it another word, false. So Watergate, as you say, that was a conspiracy theory that turned out to be true. And so we need to have a general category aware that often false conspiracy theories go viral, and sometimes they can create tragedy or political polarization. But it's good in a free society for people to have their ears pricked and to be alert to the possibility that something that you can't quite see is behind it.
Well, stay with the tragic consequences of false conspiracy theories. Jewish conspiracy theories helped drive the Holocaust.
No question that sometimes there's an other that's posited to be pulling the strings like a marionette. And a contemporary example that's alarming is the idea that there's a conspiracy to deny the association between autism and vaccines, or even there's a conspiracy to create autism through vaccines. And what makes that one far from innocuous is there are a lot of people in the United States who are hesitating before vaccinating their kids or declining to vaccinate their kids because they think that they'll increase the risk that their kid will get autism. And that there's no evidentiary basis for this conspiracy theorizing, and the fact that a bunch of people believe it actually endangers kids.
We maybe also want to distinguish between a conspiracy theory and paranoia. And paranoia often turns out to be, you know, just because you think everyone is listening to you, maybe they are. I mean, you were a member of the panel that recommended changes to the National Security Agency after the revelations from Edward Snowden about what the NSA was doing. And this is a case where people might say, see, I wasn't so crazy to think that the government is listening to people.
Yes. So the fact is that the president and many others, including our review group, believe that the NSA's current practices deserve significant reform. And the idea that the government is holding a ton of data, even if it's so-called metadata, which means not the content of your call, but when you called and who you called, we believe and the president believes that that's not good, that the government holds that. It should be held by a non-governmental actor.
Well, but see, I guess to the other point that it is proof to people that it's worth investing in a conspiracy theory, because no matter what you think, whoever could have thought there was that much eavesdropping? And I'm just, in your own personal life, you have faced hate mail and threats after you joined the Obama White House for some of your writing. Glenn Beck described you as the most dangerous man in America. By the way, what are some of the strangest conspiracy theories about yourself you've heard?
Well, the striking thing in Glenn Beck's comment, most dangerous and most evil, and evil is a pretty strong term. So to be called the most evil man in America, there are a bunch of people behind bars. That's that was interesting to be subject to that. For me, the one that was most noteworthy, I guess, was my job in government was to help oversee government regulation to make sure that it didn't have excessive costs, and actually to oversee the Paperwork Reduction Act to reduce the paperwork burdens on the American people. A work in progress, to be sure. There were a lot of rumors out there that I was involved in government propaganda, and that the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, which I ran, information meant to somehow manipulating people through covert tactics. And of course, the job doesn't involve that at all. I wasn't involved in that at all. And so to see that held by apparently reasonable people, that was surprising.
Well, you know what, Cass Sunstein? I'm betting that there is a conspiracy forming right now. Again, you worked in the White House, as did your wife, Samantha Power. I'm sure there are people saying you are writing about conspiracy theories as a way to preemptively offset criticism of the Obama administration and to characterize it as a conspiracy theory. I can bet it's happening right now.
Well, the UN ambassador and I did have at least two conspiracies. One was to create our son, and the other is to create our daughter. But aside from that, what you see is what you get.
Well, one last thought about people who do really are compelled towards conspiracy theories. You point out that they will often believe competing theories.
Yes. So the best predictor of whether someone's going to believe a conspiracy theory is whether they believe another conspiracy theory. And sometimes people believe ones that are logically consistent, like those who believe that Princess Diana is still alive are more likely to believe that she was murdered. That suggests some people have a real predisposition to believe these theories, and they do tend to suffer from a sense of personal powerlessness.
Cass Sunstein, the book is Conspiracy Theories and Other Dangerous Ideas. Thanks so much.
Thank you.